This is our league, and this is your league. From the 55-yard line on CFL America Radio and the Sports History Network.
ESPN Films presents Storied Coaches.
The best against the best.
Storied Players. Storied Games. The SEC is storied.
Welcome to Sanford Stadium. Today, Georgia fans arise as one once again as spring football comes to an end with the annual G-Day game between the hedges.
My DNA is Athens, Georgia, and I go back every year. It's a special little college town. I can go on that field, Sanford Stadium. I have a story at every stop. Although I live in Atlanta, those are where my memories are.
Hey, baby.
At the 2018 spring game, former Georgia quarterback Fran Tarkenton is on the move.
Hey, man. Appreciate you coming out.
Glad to be here. I was just telling Sony, both of you guys are going to make it big in the National Football League.
Yes, sir.
I mean, you really are. I played high school football here.
Oh, okay.
When I was at the YMCA here, when I was 10 years old, we came and played games before the game.
Oh, okay.
So I go back to high school, played a state championship game against Valdosta right here, and then played 4 years of college.
It's here, between the hedges, Scrambling Fran created his own style, where a local kid became a legend.
Targeting back the ball, Bing Rice in the pocket. He's going to have to run.
I'm playing offensive guard. I threw a lot of lookout blocks. I blocked a lot of lookout Francis.
I wasn't a running quarterback. I was a passing quarterback. I used my athletic ability to go outside the pocket to buy time, not to run, but to throw.
Nobody entertained like Fran Targeting. I mean, he was like a rooster out there, just bopping around and telling people where to go and what to do. And, you know, you were not going to beat him.
I played differently from everybody else. I was against what the norm was. I didn't care. That's the way I played. I was effective at doing it.
Tarkenton was so effective that he ended up in the college and pro football halls of fame, and set NFL records for passing yards and touchdowns that stood for almost two decades.
People have asked me about where scrambling came from. I know where it came from. I lived six blocks from the Capitol, and right behind our house was Allie's, and we played touch football. And my brother was always my receiver, and I was the quarterback. We played two-on-two, and so I learned how to operate in a small place and get away from the guy rushing me while I could throw my brother downfield covered by the other guy. That's the seed of what ended up being scrambling cornerback, and it happened in the alleyways of Washington, D.C.
Francis Asbury Tarkenton was the second of three sons, born to parents Dallas and Francis, who both served as ordained ministers.
I went to church Wednesday night, Friday night, Sunday morning, Sunday night, and I was very serious about that, and I was a model Christian young boy. My father was my best friend, but my father didn't know whether the football was blown or stuffed. So me coming into the sports world, he loved to watch me play, but he didn't understand the sport. I was certain I was going to be a professional athlete. And I was certain I was going to make a lot of money.
The modest upbringing of a preacher's son fueled Tarkenton's two lifelong passions, sports and work.
If I had a paper route when I was 7 years old, I would make enough money to go down to the store and I'd buy a package of football cards. I'd put them into teams and I would put defenses against offense with the cards. So I was game planning and using that. But I got to know all the professional football players, and I spent all my years falling in love with the names and the stories. Glenn Davis and Doc Blanchard of the great Army teams. Chuck Bednarik was coming out of Pennsylvania, and Bullet Bill Dudley out of Virginia, and these were just legends for me.
At the age of 10, the Tarkentons moved from Washington to Athens, where Fran's father pursued a doctorate degree and pastored a local church.
I loved the big city of Washington. I loved the excitement of living in that dynamic city. And then my dad wants to go to Athens, Georgia. I drove into Athens, Georgia. I said, holy cow, I go from Washington, D.C., the most dynamic city in the world, to here? Drive in, it's not a wealthy town, it's a college town. You know what changed? Getting to know the people, getting to know Coburn Kelly.
Athens gave Tarkenton father figures like youth coach Coburn Kelly, who could groom him as an athlete in a way his own father couldn't.
Every afternoon after school, I went down to the Y, and I either played football or basketball or baseball. And Coburn Kelly was the centerpiece there. He life coached me. Never yelled or screamed. And back in that day, coaches yelled or screamed. Big Jim Whatley played Little League Baseball for Coach Whatley. And I developed a really close relationship with Coach Whatley. He was like my second father.
As a quarterback, Tarkenton was community grown. And he repaid this small college town by delivering a state title for Athens High School. Fran played his home games up the road at Sanford Stadium, where the Georgia football program was led by one of those yellers and screamers, head coach Wally Butts.
Coach Wallace Butts was the meanest man who ever lived. As a matter of fact, the young men who used to play for Coach Butts often remarked that wherever Coach Butts walked, the grass literally died under his feet.
Great disciplinarian. I was scared of him.
Good football players are never satisfied with their performance, and they never make excuses. To hell with excuses, just get the job done.
Coach Butts, he didn't recruit me hard. I'd walk down Main Street in Athens, go in the barbershop, and all the guys around, hey, where are you going to go to college next year? I said, I don't know. You're not going over here, are you? I said, well, why you say? He said, because they got Charlie Brent and Tommy Lewis. And everybody told me that.
We weren't sure that Fran was going to even come to Georgia, even though he was here in Athens. And there was a lot of questions about him. Well, he's going to go to Tech, or he's going to go to Auburn, or he's going to go somewhere like that.
Georgia was seemingly set with two solid quarterbacks. So Tarkenton looked to take his talents out of town. That is, until he received a visit from his old Little League coach, Big Jim Whatley. Whatley was also an assistant for Georgia football, and knew what the Bulldogs had in their own backyard.
He followed my career, but he wasn't the recruiter on me. But he walked into my house, 6'5", Big Jim Whatley. He looked at me and said, you can play anywhere you want. This is the place that needs you the most. I went and prayed. And I prayed, and it just was clear to me, I needed to go to Georgia. So I signed a scholarship with Georgia, knowing that the road wouldn't be easy with Charlie Britt and Tommy Lewis.
In 1957, freshmen couldn't play on the varsity. But Tarkenton showed great promise, leading the freshman bullpup team to an undefeated season.
First time we lined up against the varsity, we beat the varsity. And then during the scrimmage, we were supposed to get the ball starting the second half, and Coach Butts was so mad that he wouldn't give us the ball. He gave the ball back to the varsity, and we still beat him.
Going into his sophomore season in 1958, Tarkenton was ready to start, but was still third on Butts' depth chart behind Brett and Lewis.
That summer, I was determined not to be redshirted, and I couldn't wait to get to our camp in August, and I went out and had a great camp. Thought I deserved to play, and Coach Butts said, we're going to redshirt you and play Charlie Britt and Tommy Lewis. And I remember driving around Athens, and I was horrified. I just, what am I going to do? I was going to play, but I had no idea how I was going to make it happen. When I wasn't playing, and everybody else would sit on the bench on the sideline, I never sat on the bench. First, I would stand next to the coaches on the sideline. I wanted to hear what was going on. As time evolved, I would sit on my helmet, both in college and pro football. I never went over there and sat on the bench.
In the 1958 season opener, Georgia played at Texas. And even though Tarkenton was slated for a red shirt, he still dressed and found his familiar place on the sideline.
We get behind 7-0. I don't think that we made a first down the first half. And I'm pulling at Coach Butts' coattails. Let me in for Charlie Britt. Charlie's limping. I think Charlie's tired. Let me in for just a play. He paid no attention to me. They punted to us. And it's all chaos. People coming on off the field. I look over, and Charlie was still sitting on the bench. And I bolted onto the field. Yes, I did. I put myself in. Got in the huddle. And they're looking at me. What are you doing here? You're supposed to be a redshirt. I said, shut up and let's go.
Backed up against his own goal line, the Tarkenton legend was born.
Things turned around. When he got in there, we started moving the ball.
Francis's confidence in himself, being able to deal with the moment, gave his teammates tremendous confidence, too.
From the very beginning, he seemed like a gifted leader. The guys seemed to follow him and all, and he didn't always throw the best pass, but he gets it in the hands of the receiver, and that's what it's all about.
We went 22 plays down the field. I called every play.
People say, well, he just walked on into the game. He may have. Somebody may have told him to, but what difference did it make? We scored, and that's what counted.
Tarkenton's touchdown pass pulled Georgia to within a point in the fourth quarter.
Now, Coach Butts sends in the kicker to kick the tying extra point. But this is the first year of the two-point conversion. And the kicker comes on the field. I wave him off.
Francis came back and said, fellas, we're going for two.
And my teammates are loving this. I said, listen, boys, if we don't make this conversion, I'll be riding a Greyhound bus from Austin, Texas to Athens, Georgia.
I had confidence in him. He had confidence in me. That if he could get it to me, I'd catch it. I remember I broke to the inside, and I seen he was scrambling.
The snap back, and Tarkenton finds Bart.
Georgia's lead didn't last, as Texas scored late in the fourth quarter. In the game's waning moments, Tarkenton was poised to deliver more heroics, but never got the chance.
Guess who Coach Butts put in? Charlie Britt.
Seconds left in the game. Britt back to pass. Intercepted.
I don't think anybody likes to just hang their hat and go home knowing that you could have won the game.
I can remember writing for the school paper. The eyes of Texas were upon Georgia in Austin Saturday night, but mostly focused on Fran Tarkenton, who almost led Georgia to victory.
That almost caused an uproar back in Athens.
Here's the local guys come in and save the day and then benched. They went nuts.
Butts rewarded Fran's stunt with one of his own. The next week against Vanderbilt, Tarkenton started, but played just a series before being replaced.
But I played three plays in the Vanderbilt game, and he put Charlie Britt back in. And that started a whole nother story. A week or two later, I am at practice, and my roommate is Bobby Walden.
In addition to being star halfback, Bobby Walden is a great punter.
At practice, Coach Butch kicks Bobby Walden in the butt and curses him out. And I just thought, that did it for me. It broke it for me. And I came in, and I said to myself, I'm leaving. I'm not going to play here. I'm going to go to Florida State.
Learning of Tarkenton's plan to transfer, teammates Pat Dye and Phil Ash joined the mutiny.
You didn't have to holler at me to get me to play. And you didn't have to holler at Phil Ash or Francis Tarkenton to get them to play. But I didn't want to go through three more years of that. So we all left in the middle of the night. Went to Phil Ash's house in Stone Mountain.
Just as we were about to get up from breakfast and drive to Florida State, Nat Dye, Pat's older brother, came in with Quentin Lumpkin, our freshman coach, looked at me in the eye and said, we want you to come back. I said, I can't come back, Coach Lump. I said, he won't play me. No. He told me, if you'll come back, he'll play you. And I said, well, I'll come back. And Pat and Phil, they followed along, and we came back, and he started playing me again. But isn't that a terrible thing to have to do those kind of things to get yourself on the field? And again, if I hadn't have done both of them, putting myself into Texas and threatening to leave if you don't play me, I mean, never played football again in the SEC and certainly would have never had a pro football career.
Tarkenton is going back to throw. In the pocket, being right.
Georgia's scrambling Fran Tarkenton found his way back onto the field in 1958. But the Bulldogs still couldn't find a way to win, finishing a disappointing 4-6, their fourth straight losing season.
I knew what a good football program was supposed to look like and how it was supposed to run, and they didn't have it going on at Georgia then.
The road to end Georgia's 10-year SEC title drought didn't look any easier in 1959, as the Bulldogs were picked to finish ninth in the 12-team conference.
As we started off the year, I don't think before the Alabama game we knew who we were. This team had never won in the 50s.
The off-season addition of assistant coach J.B. Whitworth brought balance to Wally Butt's coaching staff.
He was the single biggest difference in those 2 years, my sophomore year to my junior year. He coached the offense, he coached the defense. He was the leader of our team.
Coach Butts could rant and rave and scream and raise hell, and Coach Whitworth would come back and smooth everything out and say everything's gonna be okay.
He brought a structure, an energy, a belief system to us that we bought into. I'll never forget what he said before the game in the locker room against Alabama. He said, "I'm gonna tell you, boys, I know you've read of the legend of Bear Bryant. Just a man, he can't beat you. You don't play him, you're playing the players, and you're better than his players." That was his talk to us. And we went out and we dominated that game. It was 17-3, but it wasn't even close.
The next week, Georgia beat Vanderbilt. But the promising start to the season was delivered a blow when the Bulldogs played out a conference in Columbia.
We went to South Carolina and got our britches knocked off us.
They beat us soundly. We could have gone the other way. We really could have gone the other way. But Coach Whitworth, he's the guy that made us believe that we were what we thought we were. And we just built that momentum, and every week we're a little better.
The Bulldogs won their next five games to stay undefeated in conference, setting up a contest against heavily favored Auburn to decide the 1959 SEC title.
Well, we felt that we had a chance. I mean, I know the mood around the campus was. We got Tarkenton, and we got a pretty good team. We're playing at home. We got them between the hedges, so there was cause to be a little bit optimistic.
The game turned into a defensive struggle.
3 minutes and 10 seconds left. Auburn leading 13-7.
It was a tough football game. I can remember how tired we were, physically tired, mentally tired.
Auburn, of course, trying to get that first down to hang on to the football. Auburn taking the full amount of time between plays.
So Auburn was in good shape with the ball. All they had to do was just run out the clock.
Here's the fake to the full. The quarterback bootleg to the right. In trouble is the quarterback, Harbert, and he fumbles, and Georgia has recovered. 50,000 people, and nobody is going home yet.
Given new life, Tarkenton drove the Bulldogs down the field.
He's at the 20-yard line. Breaks the tackle, goes to the 19. The air raid is on. Tarkenton to Soberdash again.
With just seconds remaining, Georgia faced fourth down from the Auburn 13-yard line.
I can remember it's good it happened 5 minutes ago. Francis in the huddle. He said, "All right," said, "we don't have a play for this situation here, but we're fixing to win the football game."
I go back to my days with the cards of all the players and drawing up formations and doing all that stuff.
Tarkenton calls the big play. This is the play that can give the Bulldogs the Southeastern Conference title.
I knew exactly what I wanted to do. It came to me clearly. I get in the huddle with my guys during the timeout. I said, I'm going to roll out. But when I roll out, all three running backs go with me. And then the running back on the right side runs a little flat route, and the end runs a corner route on that side. I said, Heron, I want you to block down a little bit. Do 1,001, 1,002, 1,003, and head for the left corner.
I'm going to roll away, and I'll throw back to you for the touchdown. And broke the huddle. And that's exactly what happened.
Tarkenton goes back to throw. He's looking. He's firing deep on the left flat. It's complete. Bill Heron for a touchdown.
And everybody went wild. It was crazy in Athens.
Georgia Bulldogs have won the Southeastern Conference Championship for the first time in 11 years. Bradford Stadium has gone absolutely wild.
That game and that play was as great as any game that I've ever been involved in.
With the SEC title secured, Georgia beat the rival Yellow Jackets in the regular season finale and accepted an Orange Bowl bid to play Missouri.
And it's Tarkington again back to pass. Looks for a receiver as the Tigers close in. And he finds McKinney on the Missouri 10, and McKinney takes it for a big Georgia touchdown.
Tarkington's two touchdown passes gave Georgia the victory as the Bulldogs finished 10-1 and ranked number 5 in the nation.
And so ends a great and colorful Orange Bowl football classic.
Georgia's joy turned to sorrow just 2 months later when Coach Whitworth died of a heart attack.
His death changed everything, and we couldn't recover from it. And so next year, if Coach Whit had been there, we'd have been another 9-10 win team, but we were 6-4.
Despite the loss of a beloved assistant coach, Tarkenton was named All-SEC for a second straight season in 1960. On the final play of his final game, Scramblin' Fran went out a winner with a perfect record against the Ramblin' Wreck.
When I came to Georgia as a freshman, we didn't have good teams in the 50s, and Georgia Tech was just great. And Georgia Tech's always been the hated enemy. I didn't play defense, but in my senior year, in passing situations late in a game or late in the quarter, they'd put me in, so we're playing Georgia Tech, 7-6 ball game, and they were making a run at us. Field goal would have won the game for him. And the last play I made as a Georgia Bulldog was stopping the Georgia Tech drive and intercepting the ball that preserved the victory for us.
A fantastic finish.
Francis, he was a man. You know, he beat you playing basketball, probably beat you playing ping pong. He was never, ever out of the game.
Gonna shoot me?
Anytime.
Yeah. You ready?
Friend.
Set! 496! Hut, hut!
In the 1961 NFL draft, Fran Tarkenton was taken in the third round by the expansion Minnesota Vikings. He wore purple, but his red and black roots showed through.
We always kind of teased him, called him preacher's kid. No cussing, you know, none of that around him. He had discipline and courtesy. When you looked at him, you said, that's a Georgia boy.
The kid who ran onto the field in Texas 3 years earlier was desperate again, this time to start against the Chicago Bears in the Vikings' first ever game. The coach he had to convince was Norm Van Brocklin, who was 1 year removed from a glorious end to his playing career.
Here's a championship quarterback from the year before when the Eagles beat the Packers. He was brilliant, brilliant. I said, I want to come to your house every night for dinner. I want you to show me films and get me to understand the Bear defense, which is very complex. They blitzed 80% of the time. Boy, we had that projector going back and forth all week, and man, I had it. Wasn't my plan. He gave it to me. He taught me. Morning of the game, he came to me and said, you know, I really owe it to George Shaw. He's a veteran, and you're a rookie, and I really owe it to him that he start. It didn't work out for George. I don't know whether we made a first down. So finally he says, kid, go in. So I go in towards the end of the first quarter. And they're going to blitz me, right? They get into this blitz defense. I call Van Brocklin's audible. Easy, little easy throws, and we're down the field. I did that the entire game.
Ran target into as a collegiate star. Georgia continues to spark the attack. The Viking quarterback pulls one out of a Van Brocklin lesson plan.
I threw for four touchdowns and ran for another. I'm saying to myself, under my breath, John Unias, Y.A. Tittle, step aside. This is easy. I can do this.
The elusive Tarkenton sometimes finds himself in a jam, but he calmly gets out of it like an old pro and makes the Bears wish they had stayed home today.
We beat them 37-13. We're 28-point underdogs. I'll contend it was the greatest upset in the history of football. After the game, I walk out, and there's my mother. Now I'm really full of myself. So I said, Mama, do you realize how many truly great quarterbacks there are in the NFL today? She said, one fewer than you think, my son. And it was a great, great lesson for me. Because the next week, we got hammered, and I got hammered by the Dallas Cowboys.
Behind an expansion offensive line, Tarkenton found his trading card heroes were anything but paper tigers.
Gino Marchetti, Big Daddy Lipscomb, Leo the Lion Nomellini. My bubblegum cards were all coming at me. I'm playing against Chuck Benarek. I'm here, and there's Chuck Benarek staring me down. God, it was excitingly scary. We couldn't block enough and protect me. We had no chance for me to be a pocket quarterback and win. We had no chance to be competitive. I decided that I had to change the way I played.
Tarkenton's solution reached back to Sanford Stadium, and even before that.
He is the greatest scrambler in the league. One of the reasons why coaches call Tark the most exciting quarterback in a decade.
I'm at 4100 5th Street, Northwest Washington, D.C., in the alley, doing a complete reversal around and back and forth. I was scrambling not to run, but to buy time to throw passes and do the things that I do.
Fran wanted to make something happen every play. He didn't want to go down. He had the ability to know who was going to get open. He was a genius.
When I grew up, all the great athletes showed up at the park and you played football. Everybody wanted to be Fran Tarkenton. Everybody wanted to be Fran Tarkenton. He was just so entertaining. He was almost like a gunslinger. I'd buy a ticket to go see him play.
Despite a young Vikings franchise that wasn't ready to win, Scramblin' Fran made football fun and was twice named to the Pro Bowl in his first six seasons. What Tarkenton couldn't outrun were his critics.
I was disruptive. That caused a lot of controversy. That kid will never last. They'll kill him. He won't last 3 years in this league. He'll never get away with running around like he's running around.
Defenses didn't like it either. But Tarkenton's habit of being everywhere wasn't going anywhere.
We're playing against the Rams. Deacon Jones come over to our bench, and he's yelling at us, you know, hey, tell that guy to stop scrambling around. That's not fair.
Francis responds with more scrambling. He eludes Dave Jones.
Tarkenton was a pain in the ass. We tried desperately to get rid of him. Because on a hot day in the Coliseum, chasing Fran Tarkenton is not what you wanted to do.
The animosity Tarkenton got for scrambling wasn't limited to the other team.
Our coaches hated it, especially Norm Van Brocklin.
This is the type of quarterback that we have. Francis is a scrambling type quarterback, and we feel that we're going to have to make our living with him. And we don't have anybody better, and we have to adjust to his style.
He was a little upset that I did it by being a scrambler, not the pure pocket player that he was, because he didn't have the ability to run.
He wasn't real happy with the publicity that Francis got. There was going to be clashes between them. He didn't want Francis to be this superhero that he was becoming.
He was fire and brimstone, cussing and fussing, and here's a preacher's kid, man, that's been used to listening to his father. He said some things to Fran that I thought were inappropriate.
As time went on, he became more disengaged with me. The relationship deteriorated greatly. We're playing the Atlanta Falcons, where I'm from. That game, we televised back in Atlanta. He benched me for Bob Berry.
He drops Berry for a loss of 11 yards.
The reason was just to hurt me. We didn't win. I said, you got to trade me. I'm not going to play here anymore. Why aren't you going to play here? Because I don't respect you. If you don't trade me, I work in the offseason. I got jobs. But I'm not going to play for you.
After six seasons in Minnesota, Tarkenton's legs had disrupted the game, and his arm was proving adept in the pocket. But his heart had moved on. Scrambling Fran was making another escape.
Former Minnesota Viking quarterback Fran Tarkenton is traded to the New York Giants in pro football's biggest deal.
The New York Giants were floundering. Wellington Mara was running the Giants, and he was desperate to bring the Giants back to relevance. They gave up two number one draft choices and two number two draft choices.
For all those draft picks, the Giants were getting more than a scrambler. Tarkenton was coming into his own as a quarterback and a leader.
He took charge. It was up to Franny what he wanted to call. He was told some plays that he should be thinking about, but he made the calls.
You want to go fake quick screen, screen four now?
Want to watch out?
No. I think it's chancy out.
Want to watch out, Ronnie?
I think the five pass swing turning with the eight pump is beautiful.
Yeah.
I think the 24, 25 trap with the guy going
is beautiful. Okay, fine.
What do you want right now?
Huh?
How about the trap right this minute?
Yeah, let's.
Fit.
Franny was the leader, it's no question.
I hope he doesn't fumble a damn ball, though.
Tarkenton took a team that won one game the year before he arrived and got it to 500. Trading away those draft picks made it challenging to build a competitive team. But the quarterback kept the Giants respectable while scrambling around the business capital of the world.
New York City was fantastic for meeting business contacts.
Fran was constantly networking.
He grew up in a poor family. He wanted to get as far away from that as he could.
He grew up as a preacher's son, and that's what he is. He's a people person, and he's really good at it.
In the 1969 season opener, the people person got together with some old friends. Tarkenton's former team, the Minnesota Vikings, had blossomed into a Super Bowl contender under new head coach Bud Grant.
I knew I could not block Eller, Page, or Marshall. They're three great defensive linemen who were the Purple People Eaters with one man. I had to double them. So I doubled them with either a halfback, a center, or a tight end, and then I'd end up with two receivers. But at least I'd have two receivers to be able to get the ball out to. Tight game, but they're ahead of us. Jim Marshall, who's my great friend, I said, Jim, we're gonna beat you, man. We got the mo here. And then I'm laughing, I'm grinning at him.
He beat us.
It was enjoyable because these were my buddies I'm playing against.
In 1971, Tarkenton faced another familiar foe who wasn't nearly as friendly.
Kill it! Where the big dig you up from? Oh, work the game, Jeffy. Work it while you got a job.
Fired by the Vikings, Norm Van Brocklin brought his unique demeanor to a new team, giving Tarkenton a shot at a happy homecoming.
He ends up getting the job, of all places, my hometown, the Atlanta Falcons. So we play them.
Tarkenton must have kept a good notebook from Minnesota. That's my old short yardage play.
And I really wanted to win the game.
As he did against Auburn to win the SEC in 1959, Tarkenton improvised with the game on the line.
We get down to the 3-yard line and we need to score a touchdown to win the game. And they're worried about me scramble and they widen out the defensive tackles and they're on the outside shoulders of my guards. They're dead. They can't get me. It's wide open.
I was supposed to get the ball and go in and score on a short yardage, and Franny took it away and snuck in and we won the game.
I went into the end zone standing up. That was a pretty good feeling. I couldn't fathom losing to him.
After 5 years in New York and 11 in the league, Tarkenton had won points of pride, but no titles. He'd climbed to fifth on the all-time passing list, but still had never made the playoffs. He requested another trade, though some creative New Yorkers tried to get him to stay.
There's a kid on my block who has a broken leg, and he wanted your autograph.
Okay, fine.
Oh, thanks.
There you are.
Okay. I should point out to you that this opens up. And just a little idea I had. Would you like to read what it says, the thing you signed?
I, Francis Tarkenton, party of the first part, herein covenant and agree to play football for the New York Giants and to do the Dick Cavett show 5 nights a week. For the salary of $1 to be paid in hand 3 years from this date.
I loved my 5 years in New York. We just didn't have the talent to go out and win like I like to win. The Vikings want you to come back. Bud Grant wants you there. I didn't know Bud Grant. I said, I'd love to go back. They gave me a chance to go play and win championships and win Super Bowls and compete. And they saved my life.
All I know is they made a trade. They brought me in here to produce and make a contribution, and that's what I'm going to try to do.
Well, Fran Tarkenton brings experience. He's been a regular quarterback in this league as long as he's been here, and experience is probably the main ingredient that he possesses today.
6 yards now, Marvin.
Fran Tarkenton's experience with coaches had sometimes been confrontational. After Wally Butts and Norm Van Brocklin, Tarkenton's trade back to the Vikings in 1972 helped him finally find a Bud.
Bud Grant, I've never heard him yell or scream at anybody.
These two guys right here, you see, side by side, have great admiration for each other. Bud Grant, Fran Tarkenton.
During games, it was Fran and I thinking together, working together. It's like your wife, you know. The longer you're together, the better you know one another. The more you love one another, the more you depend on one another, the more you appreciate one another. It was a great marriage.
You could take Oscar and hook him in that middle, off the Packer pass.
Boy,
he's got an acre.
Everybody beat me at tight end.
They'll do it, but we don't want to change anything for us.
I know. That's what you...
In 1972, the honeymoon got off on the right foot when Grant gave Tarkenton and offensive coordinator Jerry Burns free rein over the Vikings' offense.
We threw to our running backs, we threw to our tight ends, so we spread the field and hit a 5-yard pass, a 10-yard pass, and then you would come up and squeeze us, and then I'd throw 55 yards, and off the races we went.
I never understood this big blow-up about the West Coast offense, because that's what we were running when Francis was there.
He was like a conductor. He speeded it up. He slowed it down. He was in control.
If it was all done his way, we would win. That's the way he believed, more than not. We did.
Even in his 30s, Tarkenton could still be Scrambling Fran when he wanted to be. In 1973, Tarkenton finally reached the promised land. His circuitous path through football, from an alley in Washington to Athens, Minnesota to New York, and back again, had at long last led him to the playoffs and a trip to the Super Bowl.
There we go. Give me a big smile here. Come on, bud.
It was a validation, really. I mean, it was like the heavens have opened up and said, accepted us and come, my children. It was ecstatic.
In Super Bowl VIII, the Vikings were chased down by the Miami Dolphins dynasty. But with his appearance on the sport's biggest stage, Tarkenton's star had risen to new heights. After 13 seasons in the pros, he trailed only Johnny Unitas on the all-time passing list. the wide-eyed kid with the trading card heroes, was now looking like a superstar himself.
I remember the first time I met him. He was kind of bigger than life. We're in Coach Grant's office, and he's sitting behind Coach Grant's desk on the telephone, conducting some business. To me, he was like the CEO of the team.
After the Sunday games, Fran would go to Atlanta and not come back till like Tuesday or Wednesday. That was unheard of too. It's like, where's Fran? He went home, then he'd just come back.
Midweek trips home and an MVP award in 1975 were some of the rewards of being on top. But Tarkenton wasn't afraid to turn his image upside down, like when he became the first athlete to host Saturday Night Live.
That sort of mischievousness, there was a bit of that in him. And I think that was, in some small way, a little rebellion against being the preacher's son.
Well, if it isn't Francis Tarkenton.
Yeah, the man who can't stand the parking. I think he's put out a little weight.
Fact is, Tarkenton had fun and would sooner be a salesman than deliver a sermon.
If you find yourself scrambling around as much as Fran Tarkenton, you really ought to know about the shirt he's wearing.
I've got a shampoo every day. That's a lot of shampooing. So I use this, Johnson's baby shampoo.
Man, I'm thankful I've got this new air conditioner, the Carrier year-round one.
Roger, you've been out in the Texas sun too long, my boy. The year-round one's a heat pump, and it heats.
Carrier's year-round one. It's an air conditioner
that heats.
Friends and co-stars off the field, rivals on it, Tarkenton and Roger Staubach were two of sport's biggest stars in the 70s. And in the 1975 playoffs, Staubach prevailed on what would be Tarkenton's darkest day.
Touchdown! And the Cowboys score!
After the game, we had the television on, and it's a bulletin announcing the death of my father, who died of a heart attack sometime during the game down in Savannah, Georgia. So I go from the worst loss of my life, of football, to the even worse loss of my father. Pretty bad day.
Fran was very close to his father. I just think it's something that hit Fran very hard.
Tough times on the field for Tarkenton extended to the biggest games. The Vikings made three Super Bowl appearances in 4 years in the mid-70s and lost each time.
There's Tarkenton heading it off. There's a bubble. The ball is loose. Tarkenton goes for it in the end zone. It's an automatic safety.
In those three games, Tarkenton threw six interceptions to only one touchdown.
Fran Tarkenton will finish the afternoon with two interceptions as the Vikings have come up dry in the Super Bowl game.
It's a great thing to play for the championship of the world before 80 million people. And when you win, it's exhilarating. When you lose, you want to go hide for a long, long time. But I'm not going to hide. I got to go to work tomorrow.
It's probably the chip on the shoulder that I keep the most. I don't make excuses for it. I take ownership of it. I don't blame anything else. I don't blame the defense, the special teams, the coaches or this. I blame me. I think the sum of your experiences of your entire life, your defeats, your wins, your disappointments, they either tear you down or they build you up. Losing my father the same time we're getting beat by Roger Staubach's Hail Mary pass, nothing could make that right. I couldn't understand why that had to happen, but it didn't defeat me. And so I think the times I spent on this field at the YMCA, Athens High School, Georgia, Minnesota, New York, all that came together to make me a better person and a stronger person.
The truth is, it takes the heart of a bulldog to endure. And Fran Tarkenton endured long enough to become the all-time leader for passing yards and touchdowns.
Fran Tarkenton's record-breaking 291st career touchdown pass.
Francis! Congratulations, buddy. Congratulations, Francis.
He held both records for almost 20 years, until Dan Marino passed him in 1995. And the trailblazing way he played can still be seen in today's NFL.
Are you kidding me? He did more pirouettes than a ballerina!
Not bad for someone they said couldn't last.
Fran was the very best in his era. the very best. There wasn't anybody any knew come close to him. The only thing that prevented him from being regarded and still regarded as the greatest quarterback, we did not win a Super Bowl.
I was productive. I made my teams better. I was a good teammate. I gave us a better chance to win. And I know that. I don't need to know anymore.
In 1978, his final season, Tarkenton led the league in passing at age 38 and remained the oldest person to do that until a 40-year-old Tom Brady in 2017. After retiring, Tarkenton donned the golden jacket of the Pro Football Hall of Fame and the yellow blazer of Monday Night Football. He also co-hosted the magazine show That's Incredible, where he encountered someone destined to do great things in Georgia, Round Augusta.
This is Eldrick Tiger Woods, and Eldrick is an accomplished golfer. He wins tournaments on a regular basis and has shot close to par on 18-hole courses. Incredibly, Tiger here is only 5 years old.
I played golf with Tiger. I said, do you remember? Tiger's like, yeah, kind of.
You're going to stay here forever.
Forever. Well, you know, I'm a Georgia boy. I grew up in Athens, 60 miles from here, went to college over there, played football in Minnesota and New York, but always came back here and made this my permanent residence. I like it.
Georgia is the only place on earth that got Scrambling Fran to stay put. The man who was called the CEO of the team chose Atlanta to set up shop.
Hall of Famer Fran Tarkenton, who has launched 20 companies over the last 30 years and advises small businesses, was the keynote speaker at the Washington, D.C. Small Business Week.
Today, Tarkenton spreads the gospel of startups and small businesses. He's still the son of a preacher, still a people person.
When Francis is on the field, he never thought about losing. And his confidence in himself was tremendous. But what he didn't realize is that the confidence that he had in himself transcended to all of his teammates. And that's where his greatness was.
The biggest thing about Fran, he made everybody feel like he was their personal friend.
I worked as a pilot with Eastern Airlines for 23 years before they unfortunately had to shut down. I had a family and I had kids in school and all, and Fran gave me a job with his software company. That's what he is. He's a very dear person as far as I'm concerned.
I get traded to Minnesota. First day, Francis during practice throws me every pass. Every single pass. I'm catching balls. Every single pass, I'm wide open, I'm running guys down, he's throwing me every ball, and we're happy. It's like, this is gonna be some fun. Practice ends, we don't think you passed a physical, so we're gonna send you back to Seattle. Fran goes, this is one of the best receivers I've ever had in my career here. He says, listen, if he doesn't play here, I don't play here. I would have never played with the Vikings. My career might have been over. I could have been done.
Tarkenton, let's a rip.
We've been tight ever since then. Really, ever since. I really cherish his friendship.
Scrambling kept Francis Asbury Tarkenton moving through a remarkable life. But his heart has always been here, between the hedges.
It goes back to 1959 when we won the SEC championship.
Friends and memories make up Athens' DNA. And this Georgia boy has plenty of both.
Be thankful for you giving me that job.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. The touchdown passes come and go. The great runs you make come and go. But the thing that never has left me are the relationships that I made and continue to have.
It would be kind of cool if you can grow up somewhere, go out, make your fame.
Fran, congratulations.
Thank you. And end up back where you grew up. I think that's success.
Tarkenton running straight back to throw. Looking. Fires an out-screen pass. Completed the 20.
And Francis does it and has the best of all Georgia.
My DNA is here. It's just the greatest thing in the world to be a Georgia Bulldog.
Francis, you must scramble out your helmet again. The year-round one cools efficiently. It's an air conditioner.
Roger, if the year-round one is an air conditioner, then how come it can save you up to 60% on your electric heating bill?
Fran, it's an air conditioner.
Roger, it's a heater.
Air conditioner.
Heater.
Turkey.
We're playing them first game, second game the next year after the commercial's out there. We had a measurement right in front of their bench, and Roger standing next to Landry. And I look at Roger and I say, it's a heater. And I go run back on the field, and he tells me later, the Landry, what'd he say? It's a heater. And Roger tells the story. I disrupted Tom Landry's day.